Thanks, Steve. Welcome, everyone. It's always good to set the tone for the conference, and Steve's reference to smart people really refers to my panel rather than myself. So I'm really pleased to be joined by John Kavanagh at the far end, chairman of Beat Capital. Next to him, Bill Cooper, a former banking competitor of mine, who now is managing director at Howden Capital Markets and Advisory. Next to Bill, we have John Francis, who's head of research at Hamden. And next to me is Kate Tong, who's executive director at Argenta Members Agents. So this session, as Steve alluded to, is very much about efficiently accessing returns in the Lloyd's and the London market. There'll be a very strong Lloyd's theme to this, mainly because of the experience of the panel and my experience, but we would like to broaden it across the London market. I've got a few sets of questions that will hopefully set the tone and start the engagement, but I would encourage questions from the audience to make sure that we're addressing the things that really have interest to you. So let me just try and set the scene. So Lloyd's is in a very healthy position today. The results of the market are pretty strong. The half-year numbers are going to come out on Thursday. Can't comment around those, but you would have seen the results that have already come out from some of the major participants in the Lloyd's market and across the reinsurance market, and the return opportunities are pretty good. The financial strength of the sector is very, very good. Lloyd's itself has had two ratings upgrades in probably the last year from S&P and AM Best. And the market's buoyant. The market continues to grow across most classes, and most classes are offering relatively good risk-return opportunities, and there's been a real reset to where risk is attaching, and that, together with a relatively benign loss experience, has led to these very healthy results and strong position of Lloyd's. I've been advising Lloyd's now for about 2 years, and one of the primary reasons that I was hired in was really to help Lloyd's deal with the issue that it was finding in attracting institutional money to come into the market to support the growth of the market. And we've had some success, but I have to be honest, and that success so far has been relatively limited. The pipeline of opportunity is very, very strong, and we're hopeful that that does translate into something more meaningful for later in the year. But again, it's difficult, and you all know it's difficult to raise capital, and it's difficult to explain the Lloyd's story, and hopefully through this session we'll be able to point you into a few areas where we think there are real opportunities and why institutional investors should have confidence in deploying capital into Lloyd's as a distinct part of this asset class that remains dominated by cat bond strategies. So let me kick off with a question. So the Lloyd's executive team have a stated ambition to grow the Lloyd's market, the gross premium written in the market, from its current level of about $70 billion to $100 billion, whilst maintaining its improved underwriting performance and delivering a sub-95% combined ratio. So if I stick off, I'll start off with you first, John, or Kev, if you don't mind calling me Kev.
No, it's totally fine.
Two Johns on the panel. Where do you see the greatest opportunities to achieve this growth ambition? And what do you think are the key factors that attract specialty insurers and reinsurers to write their business in the Lloyd's market?
So let's start with the macro view of where the specialty markets are. And let's first start with North America, which is obviously our predominant market. I mean, what we've seen in the last 5 years is a phenomenal influx of specialty business from conventional carriers, as I refer to them, into the E&S specialty markets. I mean, we've seen growth 1 year with 32%, 23%, it was 15% last year. So broadly speaking, it's been around 15 to 20% compound growth in the last 5 years. And the specialty sector, the E&S sector, has gone from about 5% market share to 10% market share in the USA, which is obviously a very important market for us. So what's behind that? What's behind that is that conventional carriers are becoming a lot more risk averse, and anything vaguely specialty is now being thrown into the E&S pot. And the reason that's become very easy and convenient to do is down to a number of factors, but the professionalization of the wholesale markets. I mean, if you'd have asked me 15 years ago whether wholesale brokers had a future, I'd have said no. But actually, they've been a phenomenal success story. And the reason for that is that they have been massively creative in bringing together parcels of risk so that retail brokers can access the specialty markets. And Lloyd's has played a big role in that because we write a lot of binding authority business, and the brokers have been very good at accumulating risk into pots and then moving on to specialty markets like ours. So if you look at the trend, and what we've seen historically over the last four or five hard market cycles is that a huge amount of business comes into the specialty markets, and then when the conventional carriers increase appetite, it flows back again. But every single market cycle, less has flowed back, so we're seeing a much more stable and substantial specialty market, which is where we feed most as a Lloyd's market. So, and I don't see that trend, I don't see it not continuing. I think that conventional carriers will continue to be progressively risk averse, and I think that the E&S sector would be progressively more creative. So that's a good sign from a macro perspective. And then we move on to reinsurance. And it's interesting, I mean, the specialty market is about 85 billion now, and the reinsurance market is 700. So, I mean, there's a huge portfolio of risk from a specialty standpoint in the reinsurance business. And those two markets obviously feature heavily within the Lloyd's framework. And then when you throw into the pot Australia, and you throw into the pot Canada, where we've seen lots of convective storm activity, lots of floods, lots of unusual loss activity. And that's created a huge amount of turmoil in those markets. And those are home markets for us. I mean, we're admitted paper in Australia and Canada. So aside from America, in other strong markets of ours, we're seeing a really positive influx of opportunity. So I think from the standpoint of, you know, can we access more premium that we want to write? The answer is absolutely. I mean, you know, Lloyd's is moving further and further away from consumer-driven product, and we're much more of a B2B specialty market now. I mean, you know, go back 30, 40 years, we had a big motor portfolio in Lloyd's, and it was a very different mix of business. What we've moved towards now is a highly specialised, large risk, large complex risk framework. So, you know, I'm really encouraged by the direction of the market. So what does that mean for Lloyd's? So first and foremost, I think, thankfully, we have a leadership team in Lloyd's now that is creative. And I think it's because we've got practitioners in the room that we've seen that creativity. And we've been creative in terms of new structures for people to invest in, syndicate in a box, SPAs, and other subsidiary syndicate structures. So the structures at shop floor level are being created. And what we're also seeing now through London Bridge and other formats is more means by which we can get access to various forms of capital to support our growth. So, I mean, for example, my business, we were the first users of London Bridge to set up Syndicate 1416 with Ontario Teachers Pension Plan. So we've made use of these new structures very actively. Our business, we write about 800 million of premium now, and it's entirely supported by third-party capital. So we're really encouraged by Lloyd's and the leadership at Lloyd's and people like Des, obviously, who have been really creative and thoughtful around building strategies whereby we can tap into different streams of capital. And, you know, we're in growth mode. You know, our business is all about setting up entrepreneurs. We've got 13 of them now. They're all monoline. They could not set themselves up in the Lloyd's conventional structure because the capital model doesn't lend itself to that. So by bringing them together under one structure, yeah, we maintain the monoline status. But, you know, we create scale through that and you know, give these guys a chance to build their businesses. So I think what that also does for investors, aside from the structure now that we have to bring various forms of capital in, we've now got businesses whereby you can find balanced portfolios of risk. I mean, when we think ILS, we typically think CAT. But obviously what we're seeing is demand from investors to try and build balanced portfolios of risk. And businesses like ours lend themselves to that. And obviously what we've seen is emergence of portfolio syndicates in Lloyd's like Key and some of the others. So there's some really interesting dynamics going on in the market. But I'm very grateful that Lloyd's has been very proactive in finding ways in which we can bring capital to the market that helps build our business. So that's kind of where I see it, Des.
All right. Thanks, John. I think you've probably covered all my questions now.
Oh, sorry.
So that's brilliant. So time for coffee.
Yeah. But, sorry.
But no, it's a really helpful overview, and I love your passion, and thanks for thanks for the words you said there. So let me just develop that a little bit. So Lloyd has grown quite significantly over the last few years. I think it's about 45% growth since 2019, and a lot of it has come from the US. The US absolutely dominates Lloyd's, and the E&S market, as you alluded to, really is where the opportunities are greatest. And you know, people do talk about the Lloyd's market in terms of the expense ratio, but if you can package the risks correctly and you can make sure you're clear with the investors of where the costs are to bring this business into the market and how it can be structured, you know, there are still pretty healthy returns to be earned, even in delegated authority or binding authority business. So let me just turn to you now, Bill. So you've been in this sector for a long while, both banking and corporate advisory, and I think you was at the Lloyd's Capital Markets Day a few weeks ago, and a question came from the audience about, you know, how would large investors deploy $1 billion in the Lloyd's market? Personally, I felt we stumbled over that answer, because I think the opportunities are far greater, and I know the caution from my executive at Lloyd's in terms of not wanting to suggest that Lloyd's is all about accumulating capital, because that's not the drive.
Yeah.
It's all about sustainable profitability and finding its role in the market. How would you address that $1 billion question, and where do you think the realistic role is for institutional capital to support the growth of Lloyd's?
So the slightly flippant answer to the first bit of the question is get yourself the right advisor to help you deploy it. But anyway, moving on from that slightly. I think, as John said, that the growth of the market is going to continue to present a wide range of opportunities for a wide range of investors across the marketplace. And those range from, you know, private equity buying into businesses, such as CVC with Dale last year, all the way through to syndicates issuing cat bonds, etc. So you've got a broadening tapestry of risk that investors can access over time. And I think it is complex to navigate that market. And I say it flippantly that you need an advisor, but actually, and we'll come onto this in a bit more detail later, I'm sure, sort of some of the terminology of how the market works and so on is not that well understood outside the market. And so I think one of the things that we all have to try and do is demystify it for everybody. To come back to institutional investors accessing risk in the market, there are about 30 syndicates across the market that use third-party capital of one form or another in various different ways. And that's several billion dollars worth of capital supporting risk written in the market. So there is plenty of opportunity to work with syndicates that need that capital. They range from there's a whole wide range of different types of capital. There are some syndicates that have used names capital that John and Kate can talk to that are reasonably stable in that regard. And there are plenty of others who have mixed capital strategies, as John does, using a whole mix of different types of capital and slicing it and dicing it so that it works for different investors. So that's the second point. And then I think the third point is to understand the sort of different structures of risk that can be identified or can be participated in. So we talk a lot about funds at Lloyd's, so participating in the capital structure, providing capital to a syndicate at Lloyd's, but there are other ways that you can participate. So you can provide gearing to somebody else's business, so a sort of a debt-type structure. And we've already talked about cat bonds becoming more prevalent in the Lloyd's market. So I think there's a growing range of ways of doing this.
Thanks, Bill. So it's interesting what you picked up about how many syndicates are open to third-party capital, but I do think the opportunity is probably even greater than the 30 that you talked about. And clearly the 30, and both Kate and John can reference this a little bit more from their own experience, 30 are clearly open to third-party capital, but I think most of the syndicates at Lloyd's, even the fully aligned ones, are happy to have a conversation with potential strategic partners, because I think what I've found in my time at Lloyd's is the capital structure at Lloyd's is incredibly simple. It is mainly equity-based. and it's predominantly comes from capital allocated within the Lloyd's market from large international reinsurers, and that complements the capital that's always been in the Lloyd's market from high net worth individuals. And really, when you think about the allocation to the underwriting at Lloyd's that comes directly from institutional capital, that's really low. That's probably less than 5% of the 40-odd billion of capital that sits at Lloyd's, and that is remarkably low. And if you think about some of the structures outside of Lloyd's, and particularly the Bermudan reinsurers, you'll know some very high-profile reinsurers in Bermuda have nearly 50% or greater than 50% of its underwriting capital coming directly from institutional capital to support their strategies. So I do think there is more to do at Lloyd's. If I can perhaps turn to you now, John, and think about that question. So we've talked a lot about where the growth opportunities are, so where the potential demand for capital might be to support growth in the Lloyd's market. Let's talk a little bit now about, you know, the supply of that capital and the challenges it faces. So there has been a relatively limited amount of direct institutional capital come into the Lloyd's market today. I think the opportunities are greater. What do you think the Lloyd's market needs to do, and the participants in the Lloyd's market needs to do, to advocate the opportunities for institutional capital to support the risks that are written in the Lloyd's market, and to make sure the Lloyd's market has access to the right type of capital to support the right type of risks?
Well, Des, thank you. I think Lloyd's is playing an increasingly important role, which is developing, in articulating the opportunity at Lloyd's, and particularly through London Bridge 2, which clearly you were very much a part of launching London Bridge 2. And the annual Capital Markets Day, which has now taken place for two successive years, I think, Lloyd's has published an institutional guide to investing at Lloyd's. So they are providing thought leadership in demystifying Lloyd's and making access easier. So there are, I agree with Bill, there are multiple ways in which institutional investors can participate in Lloyd's. And in a sense, the question is somewhat negative, and I would turn it round. There are big opportunities, but also there's a record of much more positive stories about how institutional capital has backed Lloyd's. So, for example, we worked closely with Ariel and Howden Tiger last year, and indeed into this year, using London Bridge 2, the first use of London Bridge 2, whereby we were the members' agent for five new institutional investors who came in to Lloyd's and committed $170 million of capital, backing in particular property reinsurance, but also around a total of five classes of business within Ariel. So that kind of shows the use case of London Bridge 2 into a single syndicate. If we look at the UK institutional investors, and sadly we now only have essentially three Lloyd's listed vehicles, being Beazley, Hiscox and Lancashire, and I would suggest that perhaps the UK institutional investors have missed an opportunity by perhaps overstating the risk of investing at Lloyd's. So if we look at Beazley and Hiscox as an examples, in 2000, Beazley's capacity to write business through its syndicate 623 at the time was only 125 million, and Hiscox syndicate 33, 359 million. Now, respectively, their capacity just for those two syndicates are 3.2 billion and 1.7 billion. So those UK institutional portfolio managers, the Fidelities of this world, have been investing in those stocks, listed equity, and backing their growth, both, in fact, with share buyback programs this year, and the same with Lancashire. So I think there has been an appetite, but in order to grow that, I think we need to kind of explain and educate the investors better. Referring back to the first question in terms of the growth is, I think, eminently doable. If you look at the compound annual growth over the period from 2000 to 2024, Beazley's has been 14.4% a year, and that excludes their non-Lloyd's platforms, and the same for Hiscox, 6.7% a year. So, you know, even at 6.7, you can double over 10 years. So I think, you know, we can provide growth. I agree with John in relation to the leading position Lloyds has in the E&S market, and indeed how we are rebuilding our position in the property reinsurance market in a genuinely hard market. But a little bit, if I may, about what Hampden has done on the institutional side. Clearly, Hampden is known as the largest advisor, Agenta the next largest, to third-party capital at Lloyd's. And in 2013, for 2014, we set up an institutional arm. And so we have now a total of $650 million of commitments from a list of high-quality investors, mainly endowments, but also family offices, investing in discretionary funds managed by Hampden. So it's shown it can be done to raise institutional money on a diversified basis, which is our USP. You know, you're not investing directly just in one syndicate, the aerial proposition, but in a discretionary portfolio of high-quality syndicates through Hampden. And despite all our collective efforts, and I think this presentation this morning is part of it, Lloyd's can feel very complicated. Lloyd's terminology can be off-putting to investors. I mentioned the corporation, Burkhart and Des, and indeed Patrick and John, really trying to help with these capital market days and communicating also directly with investors and explaining how Lloyd's operates. Now, from an investor perspective, clearly much of today is about the ILS market. You're all familiar and very familiar with the modelling of ILS. And indeed, I think Lloyd's has perhaps historically been at somewhat of a disadvantage in terms of the transparency of data. But that is very much changing. We've got EP curves. We can forecast a mean net return. Our historic returns for Hampden's discretionary portfolios, which I have managed and co-managed since 2002, has averaged 18.5% a year. So very strong returns. But also we're able to monitor the risk components. So we can look at the probability of break-even or better any one year. So we can see the transformation in Lloyd's performance between, say, 2016 and this year and last year, with much improved numbers in terms of a reduced probability of loss. So what we provide is access to a diversified portfolio of risk. We like to be as diversified as Lloyd's. In some cases, we like to be, on average, more diversified than Lloyd's, and we can do this through the access we have to business. I do think that one of the factors which has caused concern amongst investors is a perception of volatility. And this probably goes back to the 1990s and the 1980s. Lloyd's, like the insurance and reinsurance generally, is the how it is managed and how risk is controlled, how aggregates are monitored, is night and day difference from what it is now to where it was, say, in the 1980s. And if you look at Schroders, for example, as many of you are familiar with, they produced a report on Lloyd's a couple of years ago, which showed that Lloyd's volatility for the market average was actually less than the MSC world. So I think that's an important factor we need to communicate, that Lloyd's, if you measure the volatility of returns, is not as risky as many people think. And we believe we now have optimal market conditions with the best returns we probably have seen for the past two decades. And a little bit about how Lloyd's is now proving attractive and how we are able to bring in growth from new operations. And what's important, these are new high-quality operations. Lloyd's, under Patrick Tiernan as Chief of Markets, has been very clear that performance is Lloyd's number one priority. Now, for a period, sadly, during much of the soft market years, we didn't hear that, and Lloyd's lost its way. That remediation is now over, and Lloyd's is now on the front foot. And none more so than the successful launch of Fidelis's new syndicate, 3123, which began trading on the 1st of July. Now, Hampden was the cornerstone investor behind the new syndicate, supplying over 80% of the capacity. Long-term outperformance, every business Richard Brindle has run has outperformed its peer group. and this latest business, Fidelis, 2017 to 2023, an average net combined ratio of 86% a year compared with 98% a year. So that really fits what Lloyd's is looking for in new operations coming into Lloyd's, particularly with pre-existing books of business or access to business, which is what Fidelis gives the market. And what is attractive for Fidelis is, of course, two key points of Lloyd's. It's the ratings, the upgrade, particularly by S&P in December last year to AA-, the global licenses. They are all really important. Lloyd's is one of the best mousetraps to access business in the worldwide specialty industry, as indeed John Kavanagh was mentioning earlier. Now, Des also asked me if I could talk a little bit about the contractual arrangements we have agreed at Hampden with Fidelis. And they are modified from what we historically have had in the past. The perception has been if you've had third-party capital on a syndicate and you've offered them freehold rights to capacity as opposed to leasehold rights. And we all know the value of having freehold compared with leasehold. You can see it in the property sector, and you can also see it in the Lloyd's sector. But what we have done is we have modernized the contractual relationships in a range of ways. But in particular, what we have agreed with Fidelis is that if they ever did choose to essentially reverse the bifurcation they had a couple of years ago, whereby they want to integrate capital with risk, no sign of that at all, because they are the world's largest managing general agent, and they want to access third-party capital. And that's what they see as one of the other attractions of Lloyd's. We have modernized the response if they did want to buy out third-party capital. And historically, you've had to negotiate with members' agents, they would have advisors, and the members would have a right of refusal. And that caused concerns on the part of managing agents. It's a pre-existing contractual right, and we have it with Beazley, we have it with Hiscox, and those arrangements are not going to change. But what we have agreed with Fidelis, we think makes it much more preferable for us to negotiate going forward with new syndicates, the ability to have this contractual freehold modified in a specific basis, that if aligned capacity reaches 90%, they have an obligation and a right to buy out the third-party capital at an independent valuation, and the third-party capital has no choice. So it takes all the drama and concern out of the buyout process. It's different from what we see in company law, but a solution to a Lloyd's perception, which we think will increase the opportunity for us to negotiate together with our friends at Argenta in relation to other syndicates, this modified freehold going forward. And we think this will also be very attractive to institutional investors. So in terms of terminology, you know, people talk in Lloyd's about return on capacity. We talk about return on capital and internal rate of return. And so if you look at an institutional investor, be it a hedge fund, a family office, an endowment, they're looking at how to maximize their IRR. So if we have the potential uplift from the value of capacity and the ability to trade it as well, that increases the incremental IRR for the investor, making Lloyd's a more attractive investment. So thank you, Des. That's
thanks, John. A lot to digest there. So let me just pick up on a couple of those. Thanks for the clarity around how things are evolving in the Lloyd's market. I mean, everyone will know that the names have been a dominant part of the Lloyd's market for many, many years, and so many of the rules and procedures around Lloyd's are really to protect the name's capacity, and it's good to see innovation coming in to make it easier for institutional money to come in and complement that name's capacity. I also, I think it's good that you referenced the Schroders report, and it's well worth reading that in terms of, because it does, again, in a way, try and debunk the myth of what an investment at Lloyd's looks like. You know, certainly a funds at Lloyd's investment at Lloyd's is solvency capital, and you should consider it as equity-like. And it has historically delivered equity-like returns that compares very, very well with the public equity markets. But with materially less volatility, not the sort of volatility you think would be embedded in the types of risks that are perceived to be written at Lloyd's. So it does compare pretty well to both the public equity markets and the private equity markets, which is why we are seeing very healthy interest in the Lloyd's market from both sources of equity capital around the world. And the other point I'll just pick up on, I don't know if John mentioned it or Bill mentioned it, but no, I think you did mention it, John. Lloyd's is doing a lot of work to try and help managing agents and members get access to new forms of capital. At the mid part of this year, we did begin to publish some exceedance probability curves for the market as a whole, both on a one-year view and a five-year view, as well as for the major classes of business, the six major classes of business that are written at Lloyd's. And that does show, certainly on the five-year view, across the Lloyd's market as a whole, there's a mean expected return of about 5.9 billion that's expected on a mean basis at Lloyd's. And if you add on top of that the expected return on the invested assets of that capital, that gets the return, and a return on capital, not an IRR, but that gets an ROC in the mid 18 range on a mean basis at Lloyd's. So there is, you know, some pretty healthy opportunities at Lloyd's, but the underwriting environment today and some of the pictures I've seen from managing agents suggest returns way above that, and certainly in the 20 and 30% range with the right structures. I think one of the other points I'd just finish on, and then I'll hand over a question to Kate, is really around the diversified portfolio opportunity. That probably is where there are limited opportunities. I know that's very much where the names are looking for, and some institutions are looking for that. So when we go around and talk to institutions, people really want a share of the Lloyd's market, and that's just not available. So then the question is, well, actually, you know, what is your risk return appetite? What sort of capital do you have to deploy? What sort of returns and liquidity are you looking for? And how can Lloyd's help you gain access to that? And also, what is the role of the corporation to give you comfort that when you deploy capital in the Lloyd's market, it's going to be used in the way that you expect it to be used? And I think that's an underappreciated strength of the Lloyd's market. So we've covered a lot of ground early, Kate, and I want to give you some time to give the views of the next largest members agent in the world. I think that was the term used. So there is a lot of complexity at Lloyd's, and there's a lot of perceptions about how difficult Lloyd's is to get your head round as an institutional investor, and I see that from my banking background. I'm sure Bill sees that from his banking background as well. What do you think Lloyd's needs to be doing more of to try and debunk some of these myths and to try and make it easier for this institutional money to flow in to support a market that really is a leader in so many of the classes of business it writes?
Thank you, Des. So, I completely agree. I think the jargon can be a barrier to entry for some of the institutional investors. And we spend a lot of time talking to potential clients and intermediaries to try and debunk those myths. I think, you know, referring to its return on capital is obviously a positive move rather than the esoteric return on capacity that we have traditionally used. I think Lloyd's is doing a lot to support it. You know, London Bridge was a great PR marketing tool and has reached a lot of institutional investors. I think, as you've touched on, clients want that diversified portfolio, and I think the more that we can do to explain the benefits of that and the capital diversification you can get through that approach, the better. I think also that what we've found is we don't the modified freehold approach is a really positive one, but I think we try not to even talk about freehold capacity in our first meetings. Institutional investors want leasehold. They want to maximise their IRR and return on capacity on capital. Apologies. And so we have put together a free portfolio of low CAT or lower than average catastrophe risk, which clients can access for free. And I think on that, we've also noticed that or understood that it's easier to sell something that already exists. A bit like, you know, the funds. So we have partnered with Helios Underwriting PLC to set up what we've affectionately called starter homes, which allows investors to get their foot in the door and then grow from there. And that is access to a quality portfolio with Helios's track record. They can sell to their investors for a rental fee. And I think, you know, that comes back to the billion-dollar question. I think it's a bit of a chicken and egg, and, you know, there is big ambition for institutional investors, but they do need to start off small and grow into it to give syndicates the comfort that the capital is there, but also to give their investors the comfort that they can access the returns that they're expecting. I think access to data is key, and we spend a lot of time providing that either through our client portal or through regular interaction with our potential investors. And we're really there to sort of take the pain away and support our clients through sort of the onboarding process, the active underwriting, and even the exit, so that they can do make their key decision, which is, do I want to underwrite and how much?
Okay, thanks, Kate. So, and I'll, I'm going to pause now and ask the audience if you've got any questions. But just one point I just want to make is we've deliberately focused on solvency capital, funds at Lloyd's, in this panel discussion. We've tried to avoid the risk transfer, the cat bond and the sidecars. There's a lot of syndicates at Lloyd's that are issuers of cat bonds, both through London and offshore jurisdictions. God knows why they go offshore, but some of them decide to do that. But that's a well-established route to gain ILS capital support or to hedge the risks that are written at Lloyd's. I don't think we need to cover that, and I know this... this conference will cover the cat bonds strategies and the sidecar strategies in more depth. So we have deliberately focused on the solvency capital component of the opportunity for institutional directors investors. So I just wanted to make that point if everyone was wondering why we're not touching on cat bonds and sidecars. So I'll pause now.
Can I have one more point?
Are you going to be quick?
No, I'm going to follow John.
Go on, then.
Sorry. So one thing I don't think has come out that I think is really important, and John referenced the work that we both did with Ariel Re a couple of years ago when we raised money to support their syndicate, and that's the capital leverage, the capital sort of gearing advantage. So Lloyd's has an inbuilt advantage in terms of the amount of capital you need in order to write a certain level of premium. And that's different to any other place in the world that you can access ILS-type risk. And that's a really big advantage. And when we, you know, that's what Jim Stannard identified as being the reason he wanted to run his Ariel's sort of property cat reinsurance business in Lloyd's. It just gives that huge advantage.
Yeah, absolutely. And at its simplest level, like Lloyd's is a AA-rated enterprise, and the solvency capital need is 135%.
Because of the diversity of the market.
Yeah, and the protection of the central fund. I mean, where else in the world can you write AA risk for 135% solvency ratio?
And Des, the more diversified you are, the lower your capital ratio.
Yeah.
So our average capital ratio is 22% lower than Lloyd's single member corporate capital ratios, and that then translates into 30% more premiums.
Thanks, John. So let's pause here. Are there any questions in the audience that anyone wants to pick up on anything that we've discussed so far, or should we just carry on with our pitches on our respective areas of interest? Excellent engagement. Okay. Oh, sorry. Yeah, go on.
What would you suggest the total premium volume of Lloyd should be? Because John Neal wants to have 100 billion, is this good for the market?
Who wants to... John, do you want to have a go?
Yeah, I don't mind taking that. I mean, I'm sort of encouraged on two fronts. The point I made earlier about the influx of business that we like to write in coming into the E&S market. So I think we've got access to specialty business, more so than we've ever had. The reinsurance market is booming, and that's another market where I think we slightly lost our way, but we're really trying to regain our footing. I mean, Bermuda has really stolen the march on us from a reinsurance standpoint, but I think we could make a big comeback there. So I think in terms of access to business that we want to write, it's out there. And if we look at the market conditions we're in at the moment, although we're coming off the top of a really quite exciting five-year period of rate increase, I think we all feel there's still a lot more legs on the market, such as it relates to rate and rate adequacy. So I think certainly the next 3 to 5 year picture looks very strong. I mean, I'd caveat it all with saying that we have to write profitable business. And for us, it's not about growth. It's about finding business that we can make money for our investors with. And that's the most important tenet, and that's where Patrick and his team have been very effective. So although we've had our foot on the gas from a growth standpoint, it's been very measured in terms of what does that actually mean for the profitability of the market. So, and I think you've got to very carefully balance the two. But I would say 100 billion is well within our reach. Over what period, I couldn't say, but I wouldn't be surprised if we got there quicker than we think. So I don't think it's an unrealistic objective at all. But I'm not one for forecasting growth. I'm one for trying to make sure that on that journey, we make profits for our investors over growth. So if we've got more business coming in and the rates are right, which they seem to be at the moment, there's no reason why we can't grow more.
Thanks, John. I totally agree with that. I mean, I totally understand. You know, I used it in my opening question, so I probably I should criticise myself before I criticise anyone else. And with respect, I genuinely think it's the wrong question. You know, the growth of the market is not just about growing gross written premium. I mean, the market, you know, writes, you know, what is it, $52 billion, $70 billion, and its net premium earning is like 70% of that. So it buys a lot of reinsurance. The question about when you talk to executive about what are they trying to achieve by continuing to grow the market, it's really about Lloyd's position in the specialty in the reinsurance market. As John alluded to it earlier, you know, we are underweight in reinsurance. We're underweight in casualty reinsurance. We are underweight in quite a few specialty classes. There's a lot of global specialty insurers around the world that don't have a presence at Lloyd's. If we and without doubt, Lloyd's is the most capital efficient place in the world to write these classes of business. We just need to get that message out there, and we need more of these businesses to have their operations at Lloyd's and underwriting at Lloyd's. And if we can do that, then this club of high quality underwriters at Lloyd's that are focused on sustainable, profitable underwriting for their investors and for their policyholders. Lloyd's itself will have tremendous market presence in making sure that we deal probably better with the market cycles than we have done in the past. You know, we shouldn't have huge flows of capital determine pricing. Pricing should be determined by, you know, a real understanding of the risk and a real discipline in making sure that the risk is priced adequately. And we've seen that correction over the last few years. And that's really where the growth story is. It's about really attracting better, more business that Lloyd's is good at underwriting in the most capital-efficient ways. And through that, the headline is $100 billion. Sorry, Bill, you're trying to come in.
The other thing to add to that, Des, is the underlying potential for the insurance industry to grow is stronger than it's ever been. So global GWP is growing faster than global GDP. There is more insurance, or there is a higher demand globally for insurance. And that's driven by sort of underlying macro factors that we all understand, climate change, and et cetera. So, it's not like Lloyd's is growing against a trend here. Yeah. It's growing as part of a trend.
Yeah.
Or seeking to grow as part of the trend.
I totally agree with that. And I think I'm just looking at the clock here, so we've probably got 10 minutes left. And there's a couple of points I just want to try and get the panel's view on, because I think this is really important to understanding, you know, what the Lloyd's offering is. And there's two strengths of Lloyd's that I think are underappreciated. And I'll combine two questions in one, so apologies to the panellists on this one. One is, you know, Lloyd's writes a lot of specialty insurance. But most institutional investors have allocated mainly to property cat. The Lloyd's offers a lot more. And Lloyd's has a great strength with its embedded reinsurance to close process in being able to package and securitize short to medium term risks with a liquidity exit option at that reinsurance to close date at a reasonable valuation. That's embedded in the Lloyd's process that works efficiently and has been running really well for many, many years. That's one strength I think is underappreciated. The second strength, and I'm not just saying this because they pay my invoices, is really the role of the corporation. You know, the oversight that the corporation gives to all the managing agents at Lloyd's and the business plans they submit and the quarterly monitoring they undertake, it is really impressive. And as an institutional investor, you know, if you make a decision to allocate to this sector, you know, you do a lot of diligence on, one, should I have an allocation to insurance? And then when I decide I want to allocate to insurance, where do I deploy it? But once it's deployed, your control of that money goes. You deploy that in Lloyd's, you've got the comfort of an informed overseer making sure that capital is deployed where you think it should be deployed and monitoring it on a quarterly basis. So that role of the corporation, I think, is really, really important, you know, in the conversation with investors who are making the decision about, you know, I want to allocate to the asset class, where should I deploy my capital? Kate and John, I'll go first to Kate because you've probably had less time than us. What do you think of that view? Do you agree? Do you disagree? Or
I think the role of lawyers as a to give oversight and governance is really important, and that second pair of eyes on the business plans and the performance of the syndicates really gives confidence to the market. I think also we also have a lot of qualified advisors in the broking and member stations community that also provide that oversight and review and analysis of the business plans and performance and report back to the investors. I think Lloyd's has done a lot in terms of simplifying the onboarding process as well. So with the removal of the 52,000 onboarding fee for complex new clients has been really positive. I think more can be done there to help new investors come in and just make it a more efficient and smoother process. And I think John will probably go to detail about the RITC. I'll let him have a speech.
Thank you. Yes, so the RITC is something which I think Lloyd's has now, and I think Burkhart has been leading on this, explaining the benefits to investors of this RITC. The rigour of it, typically an external but an independent statement of actuarial opinion each year, board oversight in the managing agents, and that gives real confidence to investors that if they go on to an underwriting year of account, say for 2025, they won't receive the reinsurance to close for two full years from the 2024 account. So if anything untoward happens, that's the responsibility of the prior year investors. So there are lots of checks and balances there which give confidence to investors. And we just have to look at industry reserving. So we see USPC companies. Overall, the total deterioration last year was $9.1 billion. Lloyd's currently has £4.6 billion of reserve margin above the actuarial best estimate. And we boosted our reserves in 19 to 22, so we've got significant margin there. So that gives real confidence to investors. It also provides the ability to exit cleanly, unless there's anything untoward has happened during the underwriting year in which you're participating. And it makes capital fungible between multiple years, which is part of the whole capital efficiency of participating at Lloyd's. So when you're backing the 22 year, that then capital can be made fungible to the 23 year and then the 24 year. So that's a real benefit, which I think investors are now understanding much more. And in fact, the aerial investors have had such a positive experience, be able to refinance quite early on. So another factor which Lloyd's has is Lloyd's introduced a quarterly corridor test for capital a couple of years ago. And this essentially means that you don't necessarily have to wait 3 years for your profit. Over the 3 years of account, you can release solvency profit, assuming your business is making a profit, and release the funds at Lloyd's you've initially deposited. So you can get much quicker access to your profitable returns as an investor than previously there was the perception that you had to wait 3 years. So I think that the RITC is a real hidden strength of Lloyd's. It operates at syndicate level. How may it be developed? We made an inquiry in relation to one syndicate earlier this year as to whether you could have a partial RITC. And I foresee a time when Lloyd's permits an investor to get out early, have a partial RITC of its position through an external legacy provider. So there could be potentially even more flexibility going forward through the RITC process. One point that I just finish on to mention, which is probably more hidden than many people appreciate. Investors in the catastrophe bond market appreciate the ability, often obviously at a discount, but to be able to trade in a secondary market. and we're going back to freehold capacity at Lloyd's, the ability for investors to trade to exit positions annually is another strength. And I do believe that, you know, going forward, another opportunity for Lloyd's is to develop that secondary market of capacity auctions.
Yeah, that's that secondary market opportunity is has been an ambition ever since I've been involved in this market, and there's hope we're closer today than we ever have been. I'm not sure how we're doing for time, Steve. I just want to develop one of those points. So liquidity at Lloyd's has always been a big issue. You know, a question about if you deploy capital in Lloyd's, how do you get it out? I think the last 2 years have really shown how competitive the Lloyd's market is on liquidity. I've spent quite a long parts of my career working in reinsurance broking firms, structuring in place in sidecar facilities. And it's very difficult to negotiate when a distribution happens, even in a profitable year on a sidecar, and get that money out to investors so they can reinvest it. And so their returns aren't significantly diluted by holding capital for too long. And I'm not just talking about trapped capital post-loss, but this is profitable years. When does that money get released? I'm going to turn this over to you, Bill, and you probably don't know this is coming, but I know you know this case very well. For short-tail classes on certain syndicates at Lloyd's, how profitable the 2023 year of account was,
yep,
and how early did those investors realise those distributions?
Well, John probably knows more detail on this than I do, so let him go on. But yes, the answer is quite quickly because of the ability to use the corridor test. So some reinvested for the following year, but I suppose if you didn't, you'd be able to get your money back within probably six months into the second year, I think, in some cases.
Yes, that's very, very true, and that was very much the case with Ariel. The other benefit which investors had was a consequence of Lloyd's risk appetite for catastrophe reinsurance in 22 for 23. And so the capital ratios were higher, often loaded, and of course they then came down for 24.
Yeah, so I wasn't going to mention the name there, but I mean, there are good comparables to looking at the sidecar structures outside of Lloyd's to funds that Lloyd's deployed behind a short-tail syndicate, and if that short-tail syndicate delivers strong profits, and those profits are effectively signed off at year-end, those profits distribution can happen in the first quarter through the quarterly corridor test. So a very, very early release process is in place and has been proven. So there is, you know, Lloyd's has a strong liquidity position, but it also has that potential exit opportunity if there are losses and reserves need to be validated at the closure of the year of account. Okay. Any last questions before we call it a day? Or for this panel anyway. So one more, sorry.
My name is Barbara Shurham, and I'm a member of Lloyd's since 1988, and I'm still one of less than 200 from 33,000 when I joined. My question is, what do you think, what's the speciality of Lloyd's, you know, if you want to explain it? Is it just a capital market? Is it innovation? The center of the universe for insurance. So I would love to know what's left, you know, since we names left.
Okay. So who can answer that question in 2 minutes? Cab, I know you're an ex-broker. I'm sure you are.
Wow, that's quite a wide-ranging question. So when I set my business up with my partner Tom in 2017, there was only one place I would go, and that was Lloyd's. Why? Because they've got ratings and access to global markets like no other market. There is an infrastructure in Lloyd's that provides the capability for different types of investors to invest, ranging from individuals to family offices to wealth funds to institutional investors. Very few platforms offer that diversity of investment capability. The market in of itself, I mean, obviously, aside from the fact it's 300-odd years old and has a great history, it's a proper marketplace, and it's one of the only marketplaces left. If you look at the financial services sector per se, and you go back to the 1980s, there were probably 20 trading markets in London, ranging from the Metal Exchange and others. they're no longer in existence. So Lloyd's is quite unique in that we operate like a marketplace. Well, we are a marketplace. It's a syndicated marketplace. So everybody takes great comfort in syndication. That means we can take more volatile risk collectively than if we're writing for our own account independently. We get great collective knowledge, influence and interest within the marketplace. We have a very strong centre. We've got a policy issuance system that has stood the test of time, obviously modernising it as we go. But, you know, for somebody that wants to invest in the market or actually be a market participant and play the global game, it's the only place you can go, in my view, to set a business up of that nature without diving into raising huge amounts of capital and selling your soul. I mean, we were able to set our business up without any private equity at all. We used our own money and we set ourselves up within the Lloyd's framework, and we used our network of friends and contacts that have backed us over the years in our broking and underwriting careers, and we set a business up. Now, there is nowhere else in the world that you can do that, and that's, in my view, what Lloyd's offers. It's a proper home for entrepreneurs that want to build an insurance business the way they want to build it, without selling your soul.
Thanks, John. I think we'd all... Oh, there's an applause from Tibor. Well done. You impressed someone. Yeah, totally agree. I would just add to that. Lloyd's is the go-to place if you have really complex risks, and we've seen a lot of really good examples of that in the last year. You know, you look post-pandemic, when you had issues with the supply of vaccines, where did governments and large corporations go to get insurance to enable the supply of those vaccines? They came to Lloyd's. You know, with the Ukraine war, where did governments go to secure the export of grain shipments out of Ukraine? They came to Lloyd's. Lloyd's has got an incredible position in the global specialty in the reinsurance market, and I think we're all proud to work there.
Yep.
So thank you for your attention. Can you please thank my panel, Cav, Bill, John, and Kate.